Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Alvin. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Alvin.
Our listening audience. We're going to be sharing an interesting hour with you, and we have today with us on the line Rogier Chadet, who as usual has come up with some innovative questions, and we will get right in and start with the first one.
All right. Well, the first one is about a few people have wondered what the situation with Tibet and China, what is it's about in a sort of metaphysical sense, if anything, of course.
It's interesting that you should mention that, Rogier. There has certainly been very exciting things that have happened over the last few days. And they go like this. First of all, as you know, secret libraries that are sacred repositories of cosmic history, prophecies for our time, mystical knowledge, magical knowledge that restores the incorruptible white magic to man like angels have, for instance. These libraries, there are a total of 129 of them. And so far, what has opened is roughly about, let me think, maybe about 18 of them. And the two that opened came about as follows. I knew sort of what the symbols for the libraries were because many libraries ago there was a library called the Library of the Mother or also the Unicorn Library because it was guarded by unicorns. And the point is that that library had these drawings in them, stylized animals and flower and serpent and so on. What they are the actual glyphs that indicated the next libraries that would open. And when I finally got the hang of it, wait a minute, these libraries are opening in the order in which I copied these glyphs from the walls of the unicorn libraries. Then I became aware that the next two that would open were in Tibet. At the same time, a lady from Uzbekistan, that is part of the Order of the Serpent Mound in Ohio, who I'm just recently have met with, she spoke the ancient tongues from the people inside some of these libraries that have been guarding them for absolute eons of time for their opening times at this moment. So she was on her way home and saw near her residential area some Tibetan people, but it was demonstrations, free Tibet, but she didn't pay much attention, went to her home and received an email from me with some of the information that was coming out of the libraries, and immediately saw this woman standing in front of her with Asian features, and she started to speak through her mouth in a very heavy accent. She was speaking the Tibetan language, and she was translating bits of it into broken English. But she was saying, open the sacred libraries. She was saying there are two libraries. They have sacred languages. And she says, if you do this, then the beast will leave. And the master, the Uzbekistani master, asked her and said, look, who do you refer to when you say the beast? And she said, remnants of the past. And so, at the same time that this revelation was coming through her, she immediately contacted me and gave me all the information. The other thing that was happening is that I was receiving information about the Library of the Bear in Tibet that had to get open, and I had to receive the information about the Library of the White Geese, which is also a Tibetan sacred and secret library. the old woman, when she spoke through the master, said that they cannot access the libraries, but when the libraries open, huge light will be shed. A lot of people work on trying to change the movie on the movie screen by tackling it with on the screen itself. But Mother's way of coping with these things, she realizes that when something like that exists, somewhere inside us, it exists also. And so if she can create enough light to raise up her children, the environment itself changes. And so these two libraries were opened, and we should see some very ameliorating effects from them.
But when we speak of the mystical symbolism, what does this Tibet-China dynamic indicate or illustrate?
And the pillaging of the feminine. The Tibetan nation is feminine. Now, this is a very interesting concept because Armenia has had the same by surrounding very masculine nations. Tibet, very masculine nation, took it over. Native Americans, you see the same. Jewish people, you see the same. Those are all feminine cultures that became overrun by the masculine that goes out of control. The interesting fact of it is, Rogier, that their spiritual life, which is the feminine aspect of existence, is totally dominated by males. There is no way that the feminine really can get to that place where they have a major say in their spiritual life. And that is the case for all those feminine nations that have had male aggression. The balance needs to come within for the balance to come without.
But what defines them as feminine then if their religious or spiritual life is masculine?
It is to the extent that they live their religion. If you take a look at, you know, the beings that have overrun, let's just take the Native Americans. The Western people that came in here, they were disconnected from indwelling life. They pillaged the land, didn't even know what they were doing. To Natives, that was such an offense because they live the feminine way in that they are connected to inner life. Or spirituality is a way of life for people, that is a very feminine trait.
Okay, but the parallel or the similarity then is that in the spiritual life, the like masculine leaders and authorities.
That's the irony of it, yes.
And that invites external invasion from the external.
Yes.
All right. Well, and in the previous show we spoke of libraries, and I asked you, you know, what does it mean? Are we to think of physical or etheric? But this is sort of another question, which is really about what does you know, when you use the word library, what facet or aspect or of the infinite or the mother does that represent or mirror in some way?
It meaning libraries in general or the two libraries in Tibet?
No, libraries in general.
Libraries in general, they represent this template that is found within the infinite mother's DNA, if you will, and within her mind and within her heart. It is 129 is literally a mathematical sequence of higher life. There are three petals, then there are seven, then there are 12, then there are 20, then there are 33, and then there are 54. This is the mathematical sequence that takes the place of the Fibonacci sequence when you're dealing with higher life. And those are the petals in circles around center sphere. Well, that sequence and that pattern is, if you will, the frequency template. We've discussed this on a small scale in Journey to the Heart of God, I believe, as well as A Life of Miracles. But this rose pattern is the template of frequency, not only within the microcosm, which is man's DNA, but the macrocosm, which is the cosmos. And so as they open, it means mother, who has deliberately put herself in a state of sleep in order to create this myopic vision that only sees the strands and not the large tapestry, because of the sake that she wanted to examine the details of the tapestry that she had created. But she is waking up, and in this way, life is ascending. And as the libraries open, portions of Mother have come online. For instance, the Library of the Bear is the library that brings online, if you will, an awakening in the pons, P-O-N-S, which is like the thick part at the top of the spinal cord.
All right, and but is that of the two ones that you were just discussing, the two libraries, or?
That is for the Bear Library. I have not yet received the information as to what part of the brain is exactly activated, or the heart for that matter, by the White Geese Library, because the writings out of that library is sitting right here on my table. I haven't yet translated them.
Okay. And when you say that the mother put herself in a state of sleep, could you expand on that?
You know, everybody has an assemblage point, and we've discussed this a lot. It is, for most, it has been a tennis ball size of light, an arm's length behind the scapula. This has been changed recently in that it has become like a field, and certain areas of it activate. But be that as it may, the assemblage point determines your perspective. And, for instance, your perspective is like a spider web that lies around you. When you are in your most expanded perspective, you view life from the outer rim of your spider web. When you are totally focused on a detail, you're in the very center of the spider web. Where, when you're in an expanded state, you're slightly out. Mother put herself into the total center of the spider web. It's like somebody highly focused on what they're doing, and they can't even hear or see people speaking to them because they're so focused, the rest of the world has gone away. It's a perspective that she cultivated. To do that, the peripheral vision, you know, she had to not look at it from the big picture, but from the very tiny one. The peripheral vision was sort of eliminated.
Okay, but then a state of sleep is just like a sort of extreme version of that, or of blocking out the outside world?
It is a version of it in that it is definitely an ascendage point position. When the ascendage point was in its old way of being, it moved to the left during sleep. You know, if it moves all the way to the left, that's the position it goes to when somebody decides they wish to die. So, you know, when you do mystical work, as I did for a long time before this change in the assemblage point, I made absolutely sure that I accommodated with several practices for the fact that I could be startled at any time, and I'm very far in my assemblage point being to the left. You know, you can be scared to death in that if it jerks too far, you know, you don't want it to go all the way into the position of death. Mystics that travel between worlds accommodate for that, unless they are in the advanced kingdoms, because that puts the ascendage point in a whole different place where it's in immortality.
All right. Now, you used the word scared, and, you know, which is would be related to fear, and I was just thinking seems to be a lot of confusion or uncertainty in spirituality about it, because often the impression seems to be that when we're sort of advanced mystically or spiritually, that we, you know, the phenomena such as fear and being scared are not really part of of life anymore. How do you see that?
Well, fear as a reality is not part of life for anyone anymore, in that it has ceased to exist as an actual frequency in the cosmos, as has protectiveness, anger, and pain. However, what lightworkers are more prone to feel at this point, I say lightworkers because some of the people still choose to live in the illusion of fear as though it still exists, but when lightworkers have become clear and they put the good frequencies into their life, which we have on the Belvas Patah website, and there's a link at the end of our website, and I think we have a page on it that goes to Belvas Patah. But, you know, they can look at what the actual frequencies now are in the cosmos. But if lightworkers live in these pure frequencies and there is something that isn't meant to be or that is, you know, just wrong, they would feel it more as a feeling of dread. It's a shrinking feeling inside of the self. But it is not a state of being. It's just a temporary body truth. Our body tells us where we should and shouldn't be.
Right, so it's still entirely possible to experience those kinds of things, even though...
Not fear, but a physical dread. No. You can experience fear if you cling to it, but it's not a real thing, because its real part has been removed. But what is real is body truth. And body truth, your cells will shrink from something because the energy is opposite to it. Opposite energies right now repel.
Okay. Well, do we have time to go into the next one?
You know we don't. Thank you for reminding me. Let's take a quick commercial break.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
That you wanted us to start out with.
Yes, we have a question about something you describe in the book, Journey to the Heart of God, and it's about the opening the gate of the sacred pools in Belize. And the question
actually,
really
it was in Life of Miracles, I think, is where we wrote about it. Life of Miracles, yes, I remember.
Well, either way, the question is what that gate was about, or if there is still some sort of relevance to it.
Yes, it's actually very interesting. Just for those listeners that haven't actually read A Life of Miracles, I write there how I was sent to Belize to open a gate. When I got there, I was told by one of the locals that there had been a prophecy that a blue woman would open a gate. And I thought, well, I'm here to open a gate of some sort. I'm waiting for instructions, but I'm certainly not blue. And then I got caught in a rainstorm, and I had hand-dyed, made-in-India clothes on, and they were blue. And lo and behold, I got so drenched and stained my skin blue, and I couldn't wash it off for at least 24 hours. So I turned out being blue. Another story in there tells of how this etheric gate was opened. Now, this is fascinating because in Belize, the libraries of the blue fish were just recently opened. And Mother said that the actual opening that took place of the etheric gate was in preparation for the opening of the physical libraries that have happened in the last week. And it's the libraries of the blue fish, and they are in Belize. And every time a country's libraries open, as we mentioned in our first segment, light floods that country, and big things change for them. So, you know, that was a real blessing, not only to the earth, but to Belize itself.
But this library of the blue fish, what is that then?
It's one of the sacred libraries, and I'm just trying to remember now. I believe that it was the awakening. Now, I might be incorrect on this one. I would have to look at my notes, which I'm happy to do. But I believe that it was, in fact, hold on one second. Let me grab my notes, because I can also then read some of the words that I translated from that library. See, as the libraries open, it's quite important that something is translated from them. They have extraordinary mysteries to give. They have extraordinary magical information to give, but it anchors them into the physical, that someone in the physical can, in fact, do something such as translate it. So, okay, let me take a look here really quickly. Easter Island had also a library opened. Here we go, the libraries of the blue fish. And there were no keepers or guardians for these libraries. Three symbols there are, engraved on the walls, written in stone for the benefit of all, emblems for the goddess and the god of truth, to bring to the bloodstream that which is new. Two new functions for blood, and one to remove. When placed in the body, man can restore his youth. No longer shall blood information relay. This function must be removed one day. Information exponentially must be transferred. When something is known, it is immediately everywhere in the body heard. This will remove all traces of time and age. The blood will flow in a timeless place. Two new functions must then to blood come. To communicate to the tenth body is the first one. The blood tells the tenth body what must be done, that the cleaning of density to all bodies can come. Cellular memory of the old must be erased. Thus, cellular patterns by blood must be changed. This is the second function that is new. Envision into the blood the symbols we give to you. So they gave three symbols that were on the walls of this library, and I've made careful copies of them. The one is to remove the function of relaying information linearly through the blood, because it creates linear time. And when you have linear time in a body, it ages. There's a meridian that runs up and down through the body vertically. When you live in linear time, it starts to tilt. That's how the Earth tilt in past ages happened, is when linear time came to the planet. And when it tilts, eventually it is horizontal through the belly button in what is called, you know, the Zavuya, or the loop of time, which is like a flat figure eight. That's the configuration of it when it's in someone with linear time. But that leaks energy. And so, you know, if you remove linear time from the body through removing linear relay of information through the blood, that figure eight is upright. And you don't lose energy, which causes aging. Then their next symbol that they've had up there, their writing is extraordinary, actually, but this is to communicate to the tense body what should be purified. We have a tense body that is in charge of dismantling old patterns. And it's a crystalline, it's a sphere with a crystal in it with a spiral that goes into the crystal. And so, you know, I don't know what the significance of that is, but it's possible that there are, that this new mathematical formula is like a language of light and communication between the blood and the tense body. And then the last function that should be placed in is to instill the function of removing obsolete cellular memory. So the blood moves through the cells, it will pick up the old patterns and remove it, and the tense body will take what it's dismantled and clean that out. So that's one of the gifts that was given from this library.
And this tenth body, where did that come from? Or was it always there?
No, we've had mostly seven bodies. Then in May of 2007, we got an eighth body. And the seventh bodies, by the way, are drawn all over my books. People can take a look at them. Secrets of the Hidden Realms, Journey to the Heart of God, Ring of Truth, and so on. But those seven bodies and the book Opening the Doors of Heaven speaks of the extra bodies that came in 2007. And they were a very dense awareness body. A life force body that's around the heart center. That's the eighth body. It's like a sphere of dense life force. And then around the other seven bodies, there was an eighth body with very dense awareness particles in them. And so it's called the awareness body. So that's eight. That's number eight and number nine. In March of 2008, the 10th, 11th, and 12th bodies were given to man because of a massive event that changed life in the cosmos. Those bodies are, the 10th body is the body that dismantles density. Now, what is density? Density is anything that is obsolete. And moment to moment, as the cosmos changes and grows, things that were okay yesterday are no longer okay. They've become obsolete. And, you know, in the wisdom of our inner core, we know these things. And so they become obsolete density that has to be removed. The 11th body is the body that creates with the greater cosmos, with the larger life, with all that Mother is. It brings in potential. It gets marching orders from a higher aspect of the cosmos. The 12th body is the self-perception body. It is that which perceives and orchestrates the information from all bodies. It's called the self-perception body. So man now has 12 bodies.
All right, and when you say with the 11th body, I think, communicates with a higher aspect of the cosmos. What does that mean?
Well,
I mean, I mean, in terms of sort of the old paradigm of the higher self, somehow.
No, we're talking about
primal.
Something a lot bigger. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because you're right, folks. Folks could think that's what we mean. Well, up until about the 27th of March 2008. And I believe it was the 27th. What the cosmos was, and I think we mentioned this before in one of the shows, it basically was an externalized expression of one of Mother's cells, just one cell. That one cell created the cosmos, the way a movie projector creates the screen. And so when that happened, you know, it something changed in that we actually managed to exit the matrix. And when we exited the matrix, it created a situation where the cosmos became all cells of Mother's body projected onto the screen. You know, the IMAX theaters here in the United States, they have a curved screen and it feels like you're in the experience because they have multiple projectors doing the same movie. And so that enables one, you know, to feel like you're in it. So life became far more solid, if you will. When all the trillions of cells in Mother's body started to create reality, we did not have a tool in our bodies to properly communicate with the whole, which is imperative. Man is the microcosm of the macrocosm, until Mother put in that 11th body.
But does it take precedence somehow over the physical, because that might be implied, wouldn't it?
Can you explain what you mean to me, what it is?
Well, I'm sort of wondering, or just trying to flesh it out in the sense that the spiritual conditioning has been for a long time that the physical plane is somehow subject to a higher plane, and that, you know, true life is really elsewhere, so to speak.
Well, there is an exchange that takes place between the physical person and the vaster, larger cosmos, if you will, in the following. The priceless, priceless gift of experiential wisdom, which is where you're aiming me to go here. You're in the driver's seat. That's just fine. I love it. So, you know, what we have is that you're steering us towards the fact that experiential wisdom is the great gift of physicality. And physicality was, you know, is that which has contributed to all the other cells. This cell of Mother that has created life as we know it on the big screen is the only cell, this I've asked her three times now, is the only cell in which individuated life was ever created as a possibility or an actuality. All the other cells have been basically in a receptive feminine state, feminine in that it's not proactive. And so the experiential wisdom gained from this cell has flooded all of the other cells. And so it is the vast gift that we gave. What they give in return is innocence and purity. So there's a very huge purifying effect on our cosmos. Man as the microcosm is going to have purifications go on, so they may feel fluey and achy and things, you know, as a result of this detoxing. But the purity is flooding into material life, and its exchange is experiential wisdom. And the value of it is immense.
Now, do you think that this previous situation, which we've had, well, for a very long time, about it all just being a reflection of one cell of the Mother, do you think that has something to do as well with sort of mediocrity that seems to be rampant, like, for example, in entertainment, as an expression of this sort of limitation?
There are multiple layers for mediocrity. But, it's hard even to know where to begin. But it has felt a bit to humanity like a child that is in its cot, and it's just time for it to go to a little bed because the cot is no longer able to contain it. And I remember my little one that I adopted when she was 9 months old, there just came a time when her little feet were all the way to the end and her head was all the way to the top, and it was just time for her to get a new bed. The cosmos, we outgrew our playground. If we hadn't, it wouldn't have opened. But we outgrew it. And the outgrowing stage is very, very uncomfortable. And absolutely, that is one reason for the mediocrity.
But I just find it an interesting theme. Like, for example, in entertainment, I just wondered if we should be expecting to see some change in that in the times to come.
It's inevitable because it must change. All of the cosmos has changed. It is in physicality where it has filtered through so slowly. And initially that was designed that way because, you know, physicality is the place where the ascension begins. It is the pivot point. You cannot lift something up from the top. It would separate. You have to lift it up from the bottom. So it has been the place where growth begins. And as such, during times of illusion, those that represented it back then were able to tamper with a physicality. Had Mother not put in place a stopgap, she put multiple stopgaps in place. These are being undone. So every week, there's something done to make the massive changes have to have physicality catch up with it, to have it manifest in physical more readily. You know, another reason for the mediocrity that we can just throw out, I mean, all of life was created through Father. Mother and Father jointly created life. Father was created inside the one cell. When Mother changed everything and she opened that matrix up, she went back and to the seconds before Father's creation and created him not in the one cell, but in the matrix now that is made by trillions of cells. So that as he changes, life is birthed at a higher level. You can't create, you know, I'm not saying that the Father was mediocre. His luminosity is extraordinary. My love for him is very deep. But the point is the Creator can only create at the level which they are. And so if Father is created by Mother inside the one cell, now that has changed. So there's another reason why this mediocrity should be different.
And when you say, when we use the word the matrix, it seems that it's not so much the end of the matrix, but really that we have a bigger and better one now. So
exactly.
Does that imply that the matrix, which we should probably define, but that it is somehow inevitable or synonymous with cosmos or screen?
We need a playground. We need a screen. We need an arena for life to take place in. And I might be using the word incorrectly, but in that instance, that's what I'm referring to. So here, if you don't mind, let's take a little break here for commercials, and we'll be back with our third segment.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazines.
Welcome back to our third segment. Andrew here. We'll let you lead us where you want to.
Well, we were kind of stumbling upon a definition of the Matrix, since it's kind of a term that is used a lot, so I wonder if you could just clearly define what you mean by it, regardless of what other people do.
Yes, thank you. The Matrix, if I speak of the Matrix being an arena in which something should take place, that's not really accurate. That's more of a screen. But if that space in which creation will take place has a gridwork like a child's monkey bars that they climb, a gridwork of bars, and it's within that gridwork that things can develop and take place, that gridwork is what I would define as a matrix. It's a three-dimensional guidance system that everything has to happen within. You can't suddenly, you know, move 20 feet to the left if you're in a 10-foot square monkey bar or jungle gym, as it's called. So that is what I refer to.
But it's kind of inevitable to, I mean, that we would have such a thing as a cosmos, because without it, there wouldn't really be anything to do.
Rohir, I cannot answer that. I have no idea what is coming. You know, there is a balance between inevitability and manifestation. Those are two states of being. And there are fields in which things are taking place. But really, what defines the jungle gym is the level of perception at which Mother is functioning. She is waking up. Will there be more awakenings and more awakenings? Life is, after all, a journey, not a camp. I really cannot tell you, because Mother's level of awakeness or perception determines how big the monkey bars are.
Okay, but I was just wondering if it was, you know, related to this concept of creating creating a space or arena within herself, in order that, you know, there may be such a thing as relationship, because otherwise there's just one thing undefined.
Yes. In other words, what you're saying is, if you don't have the jungle gym, you know, and the playground is, say, 5 miles square, nobody knows where the creation is taking place, and creation is based on very sacred relationships.
Yeah. So I was just wondering if it was related to that, like, without a matrix, that there is nothing to, we don't have a paradigm of interacting and relating.
Because I'm not entirely sure what a very deep definition of matrix would be, if I define it my way, yes, it is in all likelihood at all times necessary. But I cannot vouch for that. The changes that go on are constantly astonishing me. I'm sorry, I cannot really give you a meaningful answer.
That's okay. Right, we can go on to the next question.
Okay.
which asks about, and this might be an interesting one, what the mystical relevance is of the missing capstone of the Pyramid of Giza.
Okay. You know, the pyramid really... I would prefer to address it rather than what its actual purpose was and who built it and so on. It's like a remnant of old illusory times. But aside from that, it has become a symbol to mankind. So I would like to answer you more as a matter of it being a symbol. As a symbol, it was trying to remind us of something quite important. And I discovered it recently when I had a transmission come in from a being that had appeared to me in the room in Ohio, and he looked like the Mayans in that he had this elongated skull to the back, and he had, you know, full lips, aquiline nose, and slanting forehead, and he was about 7 foot tall. And they're the ancestors of the Mayans. And they come from the planet Maya in the Pleiades. And they're called the Westat Manu. And they were keepers of the Serpent Mound sacred libraries, as well as, along with another race called the Aranatvi, they were keepers of two sacred libraries, the Library of the Baby Condor and the Library of the Flower, which are images etched into the Nazca Plains in southern Peru as geoglyphs. So the Westat Manu gave me a transmission, and because I grabbed some of my notes here, I happen to have it, but it deals exactly with what that was supposed to remind us of. They say, and this sheds a little bit more light, and, you know, when I receive words, just so our listeners know, from somebody that is speaking in a different language, I can see their glyphs often as they speak in front of me. I can also hear their language. But when I receive the translation, sometimes it comes in English that is just prosaically written, but most of the time it comes in verse, and I write the verse down like I would write anything else. Like a bird in a cage, mother's brain does sleep. Part will awaken, but her crown, that's the missing capstone, that way she'll keep. Till the libraries open, like a flower in the sun. Remember, the libraries jointly, you know, when you put them in the circles, they make that flower with 129 petals that we spoke of in our first section. When all parts of her brain awaken but one, that's the missing capstone, let her be told, let it be known, that we have the words, she must be shown, after the libraries open all in one day, into the book of life, the book of one life, mother must say, open the crown that captive has been, after it has been upgraded and thoroughly cleaned. Let it the senses that are of the within interpret and broadcast throughout her whole being. Then shall the mother to her crown give 96 qualities that all in freedom may live. States of freedom we safeguarded for so long that mother entrusted us with that to her belong. This is fascinating because the Westat Manu continued as gods to inhabit the Serpent Mound. They were quite clear that the small people whose skeletons have been found in the area and so on were not the ones that built the mounds. They're the ones that came into the physical mounds and made their, you know, left their mark in there. But they were the ones that built the physical serpent mounds and multiple mounds. For instance, their learning center was a small serpent in southern Kentucky. But they say that for all this time, they've been guarding Mother's missing capstone. In that, even as the ascension has been happening, parts of her brain have awakened, except for one, and that it is the crown. And that, you know, that has to do with the parietal lobes at the top of the left and right brain halves. And by the way, they refer to that mother should write it in the Book of the One Life. For our listeners that are new to this concept, the book in which the laws of mother's beings are written is the Book of One Life. But what the West Katmanu have been guarding as mother's missing capstone is 96 frequencies. And they are states of freedom. And mother had me write down, I got from them all 96 of those frequencies, and that had to be written down. But this put into the parietal lobes of the mother herself is the capstone and the states of freedom. And for instance, I'll just give a couple of them. The seat of genius is one such state of being. The seat of genius is when the mind effortlessly knows. And what this does, it connects the, which is the next one, the world of inner senses, original thinking, unencumbered journey. That means that you're not referring to others for your self-approval. You're unencumbered by the weight of self-reflection, unfoldment of talents, unreserved self-expression, the flowering of inner divinity. And we need to get one more commercial in before the end of our show, so we will quickly do that and then we'll be back.
Almien continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almien is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almien, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almien experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almien's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almien's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. We have about 5 minutes left of our show, so whatever we're going to tackle needs to be a shorter question. What do you have that we can do in 5 minutes or here?
Well, I was actually just wanting to elaborate a bit because you said that this significance of the missing capstone wasn't, you know, was sort of det- detached from what may have been the more sort of historical purpose of, you know, the symbolism of this missing capstone in life, really, or Western life. But I was still wondering what that exactly says about the pyramids, because, you know, what you've told us about the Sphinx and Thoth, it's not really clear to me what the function of the pyramid would be, like if it was, you know, benign or not, and then how that relates to this symbolism concerning the mother of life.
Okay. Well, what Thoth erected the pyramid for, amongst other things, is that it was used actually to go between cycles of life. And in this way, he kept himself alive much longer than what he should have been because of his non-life-enhancing qualities. The Thoth that we knew of as the very benign Thoth was actually a split. He kept his more nefarious, darker side one level above that one, and in this one pretended to be of great benevolence to humankind. He fooled me entirely. I mean, I have multiple experiences with him that I've written about in my books, but that he built so that he could move between cycles of life. It had a tunnel that went between cycles. And so that is what one of the main reasons that he built it for. He also in there did multiple experiments with time travel and also with splitting the building blocks of life. The first atomic separation on Earth of atomic weaponry was done by Thoth. There were atomic weapons brought from Nibiru, but the development of them here on Earth was done by Thoth. And this started to unravel space and time, not just for Earth, I mean everywhere, causing huge delays between cause and effect. It created linear time. So, you know, there were non-life-enhancing things done there. As for the relevance to Mother, whether she used that to remind herself or not, I don't know. Mother has often used the flaws of others, taking the lemons and making them into lemonade. However, the West Tatmanu are saying that in Mother, the parietal lobes are captive. They are not in place. And if we think of them as the capstone of the brain, it hasn't been in place. And she deliberately disconnected it for this falling asleep period we've been discussing during the show, and gave them the 96 states of freedom, those are frequencies, to give to her at this time so that it can be restored and the capstone, so to speak, put on. We're just using somebody else's folly, if you will, as a reminder.
But I was just, besides that, just wondering, I mean, could the function of the pyramid, was it generally a life-enhancing one, or could it be used for both life-enhancing and non-life-enhancing?
The pyramidal shape embalms, and if you have to make a little slit down the four edges, or if you just have a framework, just tie a little thread in the middle of the base of each side to make it life-giving versus embalming. But, you know, as a whole, the pyramid itself was non-life-enhancing. At this point, it's just a wonderful experience to go and see such a structure. There's nothing left of that life, of that cycle of existence. So it's just a remnant of the past that's not a problem to go and see for light workers. So, you know, I wish I could answer that a little bit more completely, but we're completely out of time, and it has been a great joy to be with you and our listeners, and thank you so much. We hope you'll join us next week, and please tell your friends about us so our family can grow.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, The Mystical World We Live In, with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.